On the line we have right now Bob Keeshan, and most people know him best as Captain Kangaroo. Hello, Mr. Keeshan. How are you?
I'm terrific. How are you doing?
Fine. It's very, very nice to talk to you. Quite a pleasure.
Thank you, Peter.
In addition to being Captain Kangaroo for all those years, you also have some books out there right now.
Yeah, I believe in bringing families together, parents and children. And so I have a series of activity books. The first one came out last fall called The Family Fun Activity Book. And the next one comes out next month called The Holiday Fun Activity Book. And they're books designed for parents who are very busy these days to find activities to do with their young people. So often parents work these days and are kind of tired, and they get home and the temptation is great to say, "I'm tired, honey, go watch television." But we know that children don't grow that way. They grow when they have contact with parents. So these are books that are designed to give ideas to parents for things they can do with their young people. And if you watched Captain when you were younger, you'd probably recognize a lot of it. The playtime shoebox activities where we made a bathtub toy out of a milk carton, and maybe we talked about jet propulsion using a balloon. All of those activities that are in there, and games that Mr. Green Jeans and Mr. Moose and the Captain played are all in there. Many of them are in there. And so you'll be familiar with them, but this is put together in an encyclopedic reference way so that it does form a reference work for parents to keep on the shelf and pull it down when they have a few minutes, 5 minutes, 15 minutes, a half hour, whatever, to spend with their child. And it's all age categorized, so you find the right activity for the right age of the child. And what you've done is spend some time with the child, but that's really what's important, not what you make or the games you play. What happens when you do that, the child is saying, "Hey, this most important person in the world, my parent," and that parent is always the most important person in the world, something a lot of parents don't realize. They say, "Well, my parent is spending time with me, therefore I must be of value." And that helps to build our self-esteem and make us feel good about ourselves and helps us to develop as proper human beings.
Now, you mentioned the fact that it's a book that parents can spend time with their children, and you mentioned a lot of the things that took place on the show, which you can find in the book. It harks back to a simpler time, and I'm wondering, in this MTV era we live in, if it's something that will hold the kids' attention just as it did when we were kids.
Oh, it most certainly will, because it's my absolute theory and tested by knowledge of young people that if a parent wants to spend time with a child, they would rather spend that time with a parent than watching television or a video game or whatever. It depends upon the relationship between the parent and the child, because that natural love that a child has for a parent is the greatest asset that a parent has in raising and nurturing the child. And it's a valuable tool unless the parent kills it. If the parent kills it with neglect, if the parent kills it with abuse, then they're going to turn to other activities, and they really won't want to spend time with the adult. But if the parent is really aware of their power and the power of the love of the child for them, the child will really want to spend time with them.
In putting this together, I'm sure you used personal experience from the years you worked on television, but did you also work with educators and psychologists and the like to determine what should go in the book and what age group it was for?
Oh, sure. The age activity, the age specifications, of course, are all labeled properly by educators who are aware. Of course, you know, it's a general age category. You can find a six-year-old who might enjoy some of the activities that are labeled 7, 8, or 9. And you can find some that might enjoy activities that are younger, because that's the chronological age that we're speaking about, and different children develop differently, and that's appropriate that they develop differently. And the one who knows that best, of course, is the parent, and you know that by spending some time with them. So you'll know that a particular activity, almost instinctively, a parent will know that a particular activity is right for their particular child.
Let's talk a little bit about your years in TV. You spent a lot of time on television entertaining generations of kids. Did you think when you first started, and I guess a lot of people are aware of the fact that you were originally Clarabelle the Clown, correct?
Correct.
Were you aware when you first started, or did you think when you first started that you'd have such longevity with children, entertaining children? and educating children all those years in television?
Well, I think if I had expressed that view, I don't think I thought very much about it, but if I had and I came to that conclusion and expressed that view, I'd probably be institutionalized at this particular point, because it would not have been a very sane prediction to make. And really, when one is working every day, 5 and 6 days a week at on a television program, and all the elements involved and all the people involved, you really don't start to think about what's happening next month or next year. You just simply are paying most of your attention to today and tomorrow and next week and next month.
Okay. Before we went on the air, when we set up the call, I have to admit to our audience, I gushed a little bit because I grew up watching Captain Kangaroo. Do you find when you go out in public, you come across 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds, who even older, who still think of you as the captain and revert to their childhood when they meet you?
Well, I don't know whether they revert to their childhood, but what they are, of course, is a good deal more articulate than they were when they were experiencing the program. And they are able now to express, in retrospect, their views. They recall these experiences, and for most, they were very happy experiences, happy days. And for many, I've had the expression that their childhood was not particularly nice, that they were neglected or perhaps even abused or worse, and their home was not as happy as it should be, and that I constituted something of an oasis for them, a father-child relationship that they didn't have in real life. And it's very poignant when people express themselves that way, but I'm happy that I was able to do some positive work of that sort.
When the show first went on the air, it was the early days of television, and it was just a matter of putting things on TV to entertain the various age groups that were out there. Nowadays, when a television show goes on, there's so much thought process, I mean, even more thought process, there's focus groups and psychologists are involved. When you first started The Captain Show, oh so many years ago, did you just do instinctively what you thought was good for children to watch on TV?
Well, I think in the very beginning it was very instinctive, and I think that's the key ingredient to any program that is successful. But of course, we all need help. I think people like Mr. Rogers is very instinctive. Bob Homey, the Friendly Giant, was very, very instinctive in the programming that he did. Mr. Dress-Up, very instinctive in the work that he did. But of course, we all do need help. And as time went on, we did avail ourselves of a lot of professional, child professionals, and whether they were educators or psychologists or what, they would give us, in a sense, a seminar on the needs of children. And so over a period of 35 or 40 years, those of us working together have actually probably assembled a body of knowledge and learned more about early childhood education than we could ever learn at university level. And any one of us could write a paper tomorrow, of course. And that's all very important. What is important, of course, is to be able to use it effectively. It is nice to have the knowledge of child needs, but it's also very important that we have the talents to entertain the child as well as to educate the child, and not have the child be aware of that line, the difference between the two. They should not be aware that they're being educated or served in some way. They should feel that they're being entertained, and we hope that the stuff of entertainment is the stuff that meets the needs of children.
I noticed you mentioned a couple of the Canadian television shows that were on for years and years. Were you aware of the Canadian content that was out there entertaining children?
Oh, absolutely. I'm very well aware. I talked to Mr. Dress-Up a few weeks ago, a month or so ago, and I know he's been just a staple for so many years, and I've always admired his work. And I think that you've been very fortunate in having some very talented people supplying good programming for children.
For all those people who grew up with your show and don't have to see on television anymore but may have kids of their own, are your shows available on video?
Yeah, we have shows that are available on home video. There are about six of them, and they're pretty good. But, of course, we're also talking about doing a new production of Captain, and that looks pretty good at the moment. The need is probably greater than ever. And in the United States, everybody seems to be talking about values on television for children, and showing concern about the exploitation of children that many broadcasters and advertisers are participating in. So, you know, when the president speaks that way, and the and the majority leader of the Senate speaks and half the Congress speaks that way, everybody's got to pay attention. And I think we're going to see some positive programming for children as a result of this. I'm a little wary about government standards. I don't think that the government has any role to play in telling us what children should see and shouldn't see. That certainly does smack a little bit of infringement on First Amendment rights and the like. But short of that, I think that we all have to recognize, as Canadians do, as the English do, as the French do, as the Japanese do, we all have to recognize that children are a very special audience, and there ought to be special standards applied to that audience, whether it be in entertainment or commercials or whatever.
How many years was your show on the network on CBS?
On CBS, 30 years, and on public broadcasting for 7.
Was that difficult when CBS finally said, that's it?
Oh, no, that had been coming for a very long time. It was certainly not anything sudden. There's this the syndrome at networks that they've got to compete head-on with the same kind of programming that the other networks are programming at that particular time and that particular hour. And there's no common sense factor to it. It just it's insane. But, you know, when the chairman at CBS Broadcasting said, we want to be number one in the morning, I said, you are number one in the morning. You're serving families and children. And he said, no, I mean, I want to compete with the Today Show, and I want to compete with Good Morning America, and we're going to do it. Of course, you know, that was 10 years ago, and they're still trying to catch up, and they still have not got the audience size that I had, if that's the game you want to play. But, you know, it's very difficult to talk to show business executives. They're really a breed apart, and they don't have the same standards that the people, the families who are being served by television or not served by television. Those standards are quite different.
When you get a chance to do a new show, what venue would that show up on? Would it be on cable or syndicated or what?
It could be in a number of places, and that's what we're really looking to now. We're looking to some cable services and satellite services that will supply a lot of the money for new programming, new production, but that it would be non-exclusive, and we'd be able to go to other on-air services or cable, broad cable service of some kind, so we'd be able to reach the maximum number of families with the programming.
What about the latest innovation in technology, the interactive CD-ROM? Is there any chances of seeing the captain up on your computer screen?
Oh, I think so. I think that you know, these technologies lend themselves to almost any good entertainment program, and certainly it's just a matter of somebody with the right knowledge bringing the two of us together. There's room for a good program like The Captain anywhere, in motion pictures and CDs and CD-ROMs and audio, anywhere at all.
How do you feel about the television that's on for kids nowadays?
Well, I don't think that in the United States we've done anything that really we can be very proud of in the commercial sector, certainly. Our public broadcasting system does pretty well with Mr. Rogers and Sesame Street and Barney, that purple dinosaur that so many parents seem to be irritated by. But I often remind parents that the program was not made for them, it was made for children. And even though I, as a producer, I might add more to it and make it a little more complex a program, it still is a benign program with good values. In the commercial sector, we have some very, very significant problems. We allow broadcasters and advertisers to exploit children, which is not done really anywhere else in the world, because most societies believe that the children are their most precious asset and represent the future of their nation. So we in our early childhood programs outside of television, for example, in child care centers and in schools, we'll always say to children as early as 2 years of age, when you meet with controversy, use your words. Use your words to solve problems. And then we think nothing as parents of turning them over to the Power Rangers, who are the good guys, no question about that, who are saying use your fists, and use karate and violence and other ways to solve problems. And that message is not lost on 4-year-olds and 6-year-olds and 7-year-olds. And I think that the cumulative effect of programs like that, solving problems with violence, is showing up in our society in rather disturbing ways.
Is the problem, in your estimation, the fact that there is a show like the Power Rangers on and it becomes successful, or because it becomes successful, it's copied? In other words, if there was one Power Ranger and there was a Captain Kangaroo and there was a Sesame Street, would that be a more broad base?
Well, it might be, but there'll always be Power Rangers, because the people who produce Power Rangers are not sitting down initially and saying, how may we nurture children? How may we help children? They're saying, how can we make a lot of money? And, you know, whether it's Ninja Turtles or Power Rangers, and there'll be another one right following it, we're sure of that. We don't have the right attitude toward producing programming for children. And what really is important, but is the end user, if you will, is the parent. The parent who blithely says, well, I don't care what my kids are watching. Now, most parents would deny saying that, but whether they explicitly say, go watch television, and it's violence, or they implicitly say, I'm tired, go watch television, and not supervise the programmings that children watch, the result is the same. You know, it's a medium that seems to have escaped in the United States parental supervision. We would never think of sending our children out in the snow without the proper clothing, and we would never tell them go play in traffic, and we would never say here's your lunch, two candy bars and a bottle of soda pop, because we know as parents that children have to have the proper diet to grow strong bodies. Well, children have to have the proper diet to grow strong minds. We think nothing of ignoring television, and it is a parental responsibility. The reason the Power Rangers are successful is because there are millions of parents who are allowing their children to watch, unthinkingly or thinkingly, and therefore it perpetuates itself. So it's a parental responsibility. No matter what government in the United States or anywhere else does to enforce standards, children are going to be watching inappropriate television. Most children in America, when they're watching inappropriate television, are watching adult television. You know, the talk shows and the Oprahs and the Donahues, and they're watching Grandma and working in the strip joint, and they're watching cross-dressers and all kinds of material that certainly we would think is inappropriate for children to view. But parents simply don't seem to intervene in that program selection process that's critical.
For parents who do want to intervene, however, I noticed you did an infomercial recently.
Yeah, we did an infomercial, and the people never really, I think they were underfinanced or something of the sort, and never really has gotten out onto the market. But it was a wonderful device, and it's the sort of device that that the President of the United States spoke about, and the Majority Leader in the Senate, Senator Dole, spoke about just recently, the so-called Z chip. It's very similar. The devices are very similar. It would allow parents to block out certain channels, and with the one that is now available that I did the infomercial on, it would allow parents to block the television altogether for certain hours. So a parent could say to a child, now, I'm not going to be home until 5:30 or 5:45, but I know you'll be home at 3:15 or 3:30, and I don't want you sitting here watching television and eating potato chips and getting as fat as you can and watching programming that's not suitable for you. And the child will say, I won't, Mommy, but the flesh is weak, and they inevitably do. Well, one of these devices would permit the parent to simply block out the television in that period of time, so the child would presumably then do homework or play with other children. So in absentia, the parent would be represented by this device.
Sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, I think parents, you know, who are busy and who can't be there all the time, and, you know, that's a fact of life. We can't, you know, a lot of curmudgeons my age say, well, why doesn't Mommy get back in the kitchen and bake the chocolate chip cookies to meet the yellow school bus? Well, that's not going to happen, because the two-paycheck family is very important on the continent these days, and we're going to see working parents of both genders, and we've got to accommodate to that, and they've got to accommodate to a different family style, and But that means that every technical device of this nature that is a tool for parents can be very useful in exercising parental authority.
Well, I noticed you use the term curmudgeon. That's not one I would use in referring to you. And I still think you're an inspiration because, you're still busy, you're still active, you're writing books, you're still looking to do more television, and I think that's great.
Well, it's the only way to live a life. We have to keep active.
The book you have out now is called Family Fun Activity Book. It's published by Deaconess Press. Sells in Canada for $14.95. And the other one's coming out, Holiday Fun?
Yes, that'll be out the end of August, early September.
There's also Books to Grow By?
Books to Grow By is a guide for parents to choose books to read to children. All the wonderful books that the captain read on the program over the years, and books that are outlined by values that they are able to teach. And if a parent wants to teach discipline, or a parent wants to teach another value of some kind, the book will be cross-referenced in such a way so that they can make reference to the value lists and select books that they want to read to their children. There'll be about 200 books in that particular guide to reading for children. And I think that parents need that kind of help today because a lot of parents really should be reading to their children more than they are reading. Not to get children to read early, because that's counterproductive too, but to make books a part of early childhood so that they develop an attitude toward books that will serve them well when reading readiness arrives in their life.
Well, Bob Keeshan, thank you for talking with us.
Well, I appreciate your conversation. Thank you so much.
And continued success in everything you do.
Thank you, sir.